You're about to enjoy TryHards, courtesy of MTGCast.com. If you enjoy TryHards or anything else supplied by MTGCast, please make a donation. Whether it's recurring or one time, you can help offset the very real overhead of bringing you the best podcasts in magic every week. MTGCast at MTGCast.com.
And he angle shot himself.
Or do people really not know what they want?
I'm just like, man, don't force Jace anywhere.
Absolute garbage.
That's a much more powerful moment for them.
It is always kind of fun to have a project, to have a deck or a tournament that you're going to.
I think what he deserves is a slow clap.
I'll go ahead and break my spicy tech.
I was trying to figure out what good it's going to bring about.
Oh, you brave soul. You're ready to saddle up for another episode of TryHards. I'm Sean Seacrees, along with Matt Hurley and a sick but mostly present Brian Tibbetts. We'll do the best we can as 2.5 to bring you the enjoyment that all three would normally here on TryHards. We get it started each week with What Are You Drinking? I hesitate to lead on this foot, but Brian, I hope it's a medicinal level hot toddy, but what are you drinking?
Definitely medicinal level. I actually pounded out the rest of our Maker's Mark that we had last night in the house. Megan had gotten a bottle of Jack Daniel's with honey for Christmas at like one of those White Elephant gift exchanges. So that works really well in the tea with the honey and the lemon, just kind of adding that extra kick. So that's what I'm enjoying right now.
I'm healthy and you're making me still want one. Matt, what are you having?
I'm in Brian's boat. I'm not having anything because I took a bunch of pain pills for my shoulder and I didn't drink enough water over the weekend. My shoulder was killing me. I am exhausted, and if I tried to drink a beer, I would probably fall asleep during the cast.
This just in, if you would like to be a co-host of TryHards, fill out the new form that's up on our Patreon page as I look to replace these two. Okay, I'll give Brian a waiver.
At least I'm having a beverage. Come on, Hurley. Good Lord. I'm sick. I slept for like 12 hours a day.
I don't know what their excuses could possibly be, but I think we'll be able to get through the show as it is. I'm taking a page out of Brian's book from last week. It's unusually cool in the Midwest right now. So I went down into the basement / cellaring area and started kind of pawing through my bottles of stouts and porters and special things for the fall and winter. And then it got super humid and I went, I've got about, 12 or so IPAs still in the back of the fridge that I need to figure when I'm going to have those before the weather does finally take the turn. So we grabbed a couple of the Founders All Day IPAs. It's become my standby this summer, and we're having those as we do the cast here this evening. I hope you have something just as delicious as we unfurl this episode of TryHards. Brian, did you play any Magic before you got the death coughs this week?
No, unfortunately, I did not. Slowly but surely trying to get the cards I've loaned out to people back, so people have just started throwing them, leaving them at the shop for me, but I was not able to make it down for Commander on Friday night, which really didn't break my heart. And there really wasn't much else going on. I spent Saturday, part of the reason why I think I'm sick, I spent Saturday at a lake doing some jet skiing and out in the water with the girls and some other things, so that couldn't have helped my current internal troubles, I'm sure.
While Matt was off at the big GP in Indianapolis, we'll get there in just a moment, I had the introduction to Legacy Sunday with the Padawan, Rachel. I put together a deck for her, not one that I thought was necessarily the best deck or one that she might end up playing, but the way I decided to go about it was to put together the deck that introduced the majority or the most fundamental cards in the format. So I put together a four-color Stoneblade deck for her to kind of get to know. She got to know the interaction between Brainstorm and Fetchlands, the different times you want to play a Brainstorm or a Ponder if you have both, how you have to manage your mana base and colors in Legacy. People go, well, you've got fetches and duels. How hard can it be? Well, when you're trying to play Deathrite Shaman in a blue-white deck, it can be quite the challenge. She also got introduced to things like Force of Will and Daze. So it'll be interesting to see how she continues to keep up. She really enjoyed it, even though that the only two decks I had for her to play against were Reanimator and Pox. So two very different ends of the spectrum. As she was kind of the fair deck in the middle, we'll be able to continue that going forward. That was the Magic I played this weekend. Matt, you were on the road at Indianapolis, one of our favorite Midwest getaway weekends when we want to play Magic or maybe have a great guys weekend. How was the weekend for you? And I know you're going to save some legacy talk for a little later in the podcast, as we're going to debut a feature that we're going to come back to on our run-up to Eternal Weekend.
It was an absolute blast. Played tons of Legacy. I'll kind of talk about that later. But other two things I actually did, I sold a bunch of cards, but the other two things I did was play, they call them Commander Cabanas. For $50, what you got was a random sealed Commander deck from one of the new Commander decks I had released this weekend. And you got essentially three rounds with 30 tickets each. So it's like a 10 tickets was a booster pack off the prize wall. And then you had to distribute like 10 tickets to whoever killed you. You got 10 tickets whenever you killed somebody. It was a ton of fun. We played three rounds, so you didn't play against the same deck. Everyone was having a blast. On Saturday when I did, I got the Vampire deck. And the Vampire deck is very powerful EDH side. And then on Sunday when I did, I got the Wizards deck, which actually I was wanting to buy a Wizards deck anyways. And I was drawing like a billion cards with it. So it was right up my alley. The other thing, I didn't get to draft at all this weekend. I did play in one of the, they call them like a quick fire seal or cheap sealed event on Friday, and opened my seal pool. And it was absolute garbage. I played in one match and I'm like, I'm done with this. And basically it was a one and done type of thing. I wasn't too happy with that one, but didn't get to do any drafts at all because I was too busy playing the king of all formats, which is Legacy. I got to actually meet some fans. I got to meet Jeremy finally, that we had him on the show last week. Nice to meet him. I got to meet some of the guys from Galesburg, and then I got to eat some delicious food and drink some good beer as well. So that's what it was all about. It was really important.
The successful things that Matt did over the weekend weren't just the social aspects, but we always stress those because we don't always have a lot of success with the cardboard. Matt did, and we're going to talk about that a little bit later in the show today. Brian, you were busy on Patreon this past week with the debut of Bri's Brew of the Week. How'd you like it, and are we going to get another one this Thursday?
Oh, absolutely. This is something I'm planning on having up every week, probably coming out Thursday, as you said. It went up last week. So this past week, I couldn't decide whether to do a spicy brew to drink or a spicy brew deck build wise, so I did both. I put in the deck that crushed my face at our Wednesday night modern tournament that I've been playing at a lot over the summer by Eric Basley. So Baz, he's the one who kind of had this idea of maybe doing a brew of the week, so I thought it would be fitting that he had the first deck up there. And it is a kind of a spicier take on a modern burn deck with Bumpin' the Night, Sin Prodder, Vexing Devil, things like that. So it's pretty fun.
If you hit up the Patreon site for the show each week, just scroll down a little bit and you'll find a poll that Matt put up on August 28th. That was the day of the banned and restricted announcement. It's the day we're recording. And it's also the day that Wizards decided to drop some Ixalan news. We're going to get into this much deeper a little later in the show. But Matt, why'd you decide to put up the poll? And have you been surprised by any of the reaction so far?
You know, I haven't been surprised. I put it up because this is a pretty massive change. We've got 33-33-33 between Don't Care, Magic is Ruined Forever, and Can't wait to cast multiple of the same or of the same name Planeswalker. We'll talk about it later, but it doesn't really surprise me, and I want everyone to kind of weigh in, and we can discuss it in depth next week because, you know, everyone has a tendency to overreact a little bit, but once brews start coming out, once things start going about with the changes, we'll see what happens.
Guys, GP ending this weekend, Matt was there representing the tryhards. Ultimately, he didn't take it down. Of course, he didn't play in the main event. Andrew Cuneo did. He knocked off Kyle Bogomis in the finals. It was limited for the weekend, and then they spun that into drafts at various points. You look at a top eight that had Cassis, Funkhauser, Rubin. This was a pretty stacked top eight in Indy. 1,169 out for the limited format. And then in Mets, it was also limited. Almost 1,500, 1,485. Francesco Hugani knocked off Martin Yuza. Yuza now the bridesmaid three times in a limited GP during this current rotation. So success, yes, but not being able to kind of seize that last round. Don't worry, he's still pretty good at Magic. Brian, you like to play limited probably more than anybody on the show. Have you played much of this limited format, and have you seen it evolve at all where we are now? We're pretty deep into this limited format.
Yeah, we are deep in the limited format, and I have to say I have not played any of the Hour of Devastation sealed or draft. I had my fair share of Amonkhet. more so with Kaladesh and Aether Revolt. So it's interesting. The Hour of Devastation stuff, kind of, I was looking at some of these cards and the very little coverage I caught, thinking, yeah, that seems pretty good. I was wondering what else was in the pack. You know, you couldn't get a good view of what all the cards were. People in the final time that you're doing a limited, people are just kind of ready for it to be done. All eyes are kind of to the future on Ixalan and things. But there's a lot of good cards, and it can make for a good play experience, I think. I think that this sealed format's been really, really solid.
Hurley, we have the stress on both limited and constructed at the highest levels of the game at the Pro Tour. Do you like having limited GPs this deep into a season? Because it seems now the format is much different than when it first rolled out with Hour of Devastation being released.
We actually discussed this exact topic on the way home. The friend of mine that was riding in the passenger seat, he was actually the one that placed the highest. I think he got like 109th or 111th. I don't remember exactly which one. He was preparing a ton. He said it's a mixed bag. He likes it. This GP was late in the season for him because he was able to prepare better for it. But at the same time, I guess he was very surprised at only having, you know, about 1,200 players, I think it was, at the GP. We kind of discussed that. And he thinks it's because it's so late in the format where people just aren't interested in it anymore. And he went into day two with X and two, and he goes, maybe I would have got X and one if there was a lot more people there, because a lot of people wouldn't have had the experience, you know, he had had, and they wouldn't have prepared. So it would have been more people that just said, oh, you know what? Screw it, it's a GP. On the flip side of that, I think the GP was $90 to register for. So maybe the money changed a big portion of that as well. But I like having them later because you get to see it's more skill intensive format overall.
Coming up this weekend, two more GPs going back to standard. Last breath of this mega standard format, DC, Stateside, and Turin, if you're going to be in Europe for this weekend's GPs. As for myself, I'll be down in Columbia, Missouri at Valhalla's Gate for that legacy fundraiser. Can't wait to get down there and to see a bunch of people I know who are going to be there. Guys, that brings us up to the news this week. Today, the day we're recording on Monday, is the day that Wizards rolled out this banned and restricted announcement. Now, there were no bans in any formats. There were some restrictions in Vintage. We're not big Vintage players, but it was just two. Thorn of Amethyst and Monastery Mentor both got restricted, and Yawgmoth's Bargain got unrestricted. People were kind of scratching their head going, wait a minute, you've got better card drawers like Gristlebrand that are legal in the format, but... So I think this was just some maintenance on the banned and restricted list. We also got a curious announcement from Wizards that the next banned and restricted announcement will be on October 17th. That's just 48 hours before we're going to be playing an Eternal Weekend. So while it's unlikely that they're going to raise up and smack something down in Legacy ahead of that weekend, it's going to make for a little bit of ominous timing as we get ready for it. That being said, no bans in Standard. I certainly didn't think any were necessary this time around. But is it because of the lower power level? Matt, we've talked about this quite a bit, and I have to disagree with you. You were part of the group that said Amonkhet, Hour of Devastation. Ugh, looks like the power level is going to be so low. I don't really know if I want to play in this standard environment. But I think that people really don't know what they want. You've got players who say they want higher power level, higher power level. Well, you want that until we get Callblade and then nobody comes out. Now that the power level has been lowered a little bit, we're seeing more brews. We're seeing more enthusiasm around the format in and of itself. And we're seeing a noticeable uptick of interest even at the end of its life cycle. Were we just wrong about how powerful Amonkhet and Hour of Devastation were? Or do people really not know what they want? They might tell you they want power, but what they want is a little bit lower powered, more wide open format to play in.
I want to correct you on one thing, Sean. I never said I didn't want to play this. I just said that the power level is going to be ramped down massively. But I think you're right. I don't think people know what they want. The formats where you have extremely low power levels, I always hear compared to Mercadia Mask. I didn't play during that era, but, you know, going from the Urza's Block to Mercadia Mask lowered the power level. When you have those lower power levels, you get more brews. I think that I like the lower power level formats because you can brew a lot more. Your deck isn't just blown out because, oh, look, I played a 4-drop Gideon that is literally probably the top 3 or 4 Planeswalkers ever made. I don't think that people know what they want. I agree with you, and I really, really hope that it does have an even keel where they don't have to do any more bannings because maybe one card is just sticking out just way too far as power level goes.
No, I think we're all nervously awaiting Ixalan and its full spoilers to see if that will happen. Brian, as we wait for Ixalan to be fully rolled out, what say you? Did we just get it wrong as a community with the power level in Amonkhet and Hour of Devastation? Or do players really not know what they want? They think they want something because it might make them look good. Ooh, I'm playing in a powerful format, but when they get it, they're not always happy.
That's true, but I think we've said this before on the show. You can't always give the players what they want. It doesn't make for good long-term gameplay in a certain set over multiple different formats. The issue that we've seen with power level, you know, spiking and all the bans and things, I think was a combination of things. A, Wizards janking with their rotation schedule, where, you know, certain cards weren't supposed to be in with other cards, so you had some synergies that weren't supposed to happen. And B, they just flat out missed a couple cards in R&D. So those two things compounded, and then, of course, Magic players being Magic players will jump on those and say, oh, this is terrible, this is terrible, what are you going to do, what are you going to do? Wizards, you know, muddled their way through it, not saying they did everything perfectly by any stretch of the imagination. I thought it was very uneven over the last, you know, year, but I think finally we can put Gideon, Ally of Zendikar, to bed this fall and tuck him in nicely and just kind of wait for him to pop up again in some modern brew or, God forbid, some legacy brew. I don't think people are going to miss it. I do think they want power. They just want interactive power, not one-sided, non-interactive.
I think that interactive play pattern, you're on to something there, and we'll come back to that in the future as we talk about sets. What are we going to see when Ixalan gets released? Well, we saw more from Wizards as they tipped their hand on a topic they usually never say anything on, and that was addressing leaked or stolen intellectual property. About 3-4 months ago, it got widely well known that whole card sheets, uncut sheets, had been stolen from the printer as they were preparing for the print of Ixalan. Some blurry photos were taken. They made their way to the internet. The culprit even tried to fiscally capitalize on theft by offering those uncut sheets for sale. Wizards has now acknowledged that they are throwing the full force of the law at the perpetrator, who has been caught by authorities. But guys, this now leaves an irrevocable hole in Wizards' plan to roll out Ixalan. I thought they were onto something with the traveling geocaching experience of exploration and revealing. Whether or not it does affect the story, we'll find out in the future. But Wizards has had to push up their reveal timetable because of the known information that is out too early. With that in mind, we got the Ixalan Mechanics article today, and we know that Raid is going to return. Explore is one of the new mechanics. Essentially, it functions kind of like the old Sorcery Explore. When you play a creature or permanent that has Explore on it, when Explore triggers, you'll look at the top card of your library. If it's a land, put it into your hand. If it's not, the creature in question gets a 1-1 counter, and you get to decide whether to top or bottom. So it's sort of a modified Scry. Vehicles are coming back. Flip cards are coming back. And maybe most controversially, there has been a rule change regarding planeswalkers. Now, Gideon won't be around to see this in Standard, Brian, and I know that's going to break your heart. But in essence, what the rule change is that all planeswalkers will now have the super type Legendary, and they're changing the uniqueness rule to the Legendary rule. So now you'll be able to have two Jaces in play as long as they aren't the exact same copy of Jace. I think this is going to be done just in time for rotation to go by, because 3-drop Gideon into 4-drop Gideon sounds absolutely miserable to me. I'm mostly undecided, but on the side of saying, I kind of wish the old days were still here. This is going to make, I think, planeswalkers feel less unique and less powerful. And I think we're going to see a powering down, as Hurley mentioned, because of the fact that you'll be able to have multiple copies on the board together. Brian, do you think this is going to be ultimately good for the game or not? And do you anticipate a lot of change to come from Wizards around this announcement?
I kind of cocked my head when I read the news today about this. I was trying to figure out what good it's going to bring about. Because, as you said, Sean Lee, the Planeswalkers are a unique part of the game and have been so since the first time they were released in Lorwyn. That's been a long time ago. And we've seen so many different iterations of Planeswalkers. Why does Wizards feel the need now to get more Planeswalkers in play at the same time, I guess? there was the whole flap not too long ago about, you know, we have so many Oath of the Gatewatch. We have so many Nissas. We have so many Jace. We have so many Chandra iterations. Well, now you can just play them all at the same time, I guess. Seeing that announcement and then seeing another Jace kind of made me smirk a little bit. First of all, Jace should have a shirt on. That's just my opinion. But Jace Pirate, I'm just like, man, they'll force Jace anywhere. I'm like, are they going to have Jace riding a dinosaur in one of the upcoming sets? It's just, you know, who knows? I'm not real thrilled with this. I guess I'd give it like a 3 or a 4 out of 10 on the excitement scale. I just hope it does not ruin interactive gameplay. I hope that they have thought through all of the things that this could affect and to really maybe take a step back and look and say, are we changing just to change, or is this something that needs to be addressed? And honestly, I don't see what it could have addressed and why they're making the change right now.
We all know Jace not nearly cool enough to ride a dinosaur. Matt, what say you?
I think in Modern, it's going to be miserable to play 3-drop Jace into 4-drop Jace into 5-drop Jace, and that's a legitimate gameplay. I'm not sure why they made it. I mean, I agree with Brian. I just do not understand. And the other thing is that I think they wanted to play around with like making copies of himself. So I think that's why they made the change. I just don't know why, you know, why the change had to happen. There's a lot of unknowns here. So I like to think that this maybe won't affect the game that much. You know, people are saying, oh, the game, you know, the world's over, blah, blah, blah. Magic's ruined forever, like I put it on the poll. But I personally think it might open up a little bit of gameplay in Modern. It's going to make some EDH decks just miserable to play against. And the final thing is, I agree with you also, Brian. Why does he have his shirt off, and why does he look high? That's the other question. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, I did notice that. There was a little bit of a... I don't know. There's a faraway look in his eyes that he normally doesn't have. He's so focused on his mental telepathy, which is what he's known for. So yeah, it's just a little strange, a little out of character for Jace to be seen kind of as the pirate brigand, so to speak.
I'll go deep in the tank, though, and I'll say maybe in his mental fight with Nicol Bolas, where he had to basically emergency planeswalk off Amonkhet, he's stranded there. He doesn't realize who he is, and maybe he's got amnesia. I mean, that's very possible, I guess.
Yes, Matt is going to wander off to his new Vorthos podcast, and we'll have an opening here on TriHards. Let's swashbuckle over to a couple other topics that were covered in the Ixalan Mechanics release today. Guys, it seems that flip cards and vehicles are not going to be unique to the environment that they first debuted in. They seem to be given the green light to be ongoing perpetual presences in Magic. Vehicles are coming back in Ixalan, and flip cards are taking themselves to dimensions we haven't seen before. Now, we haven't seen the whole set yet, Matt, but do you like where Magic is going, making vehicles and flip cards essentially evergreen?
The vehicles, I don't know, because you have to walk a very fine line with them. I mean, they'll get it. They'll tune it in. The flip cards, I think they're kind of cool, honestly. The specific one we saw today, I'm not sure how much I like that specific one. Transforming into different types and transforming into something that might be usable or, you know, whatever the case may be. It's kind of weird, you know, making them not necessarily evergreen, but making them different, making them in other sets. I think it's totally fine. Go for it. Just don't get too ridiculous with it. I don't want this to become a totally different card game.
Brian, are you in for flipping out for value and having a dinosaur crew your schooner?
Yeah, totally. I love flip cards. I think they're great. Dinosaurs crewing vehicles seems like a bad idea. It should get like a -2/-2 agility counter because we all know having short arms doesn't let you drive nearly as well. It's cool. I like the flip idea that, you know, you reach that kind of threshold mentality and then something does something else. The treasure map becomes the treasure trove, the treasure island kind of card. That seems like a really cool R&D design idea. And so I'm looking forward to those for sure.
Ixalan seems like it's going to have a whole bunch of treasure. I can't wait to loot it coming up in just a couple of weeks. As we make our way not only toward rotation, but also here on TriHards toward Eternal Weekend, we're going to debut a recurring feature, at least for the next month or month and a half, as we head toward EW. Simply what we're going to do is give you an inside look at the decks that we plan to play at Eternal Weekend. And hopefully this will help convince you that Legacy is, as Matt said earlier, the king of all formats. and some of the insight as to how we like to play the game. We went deep into this with the Leovold deck before SCG Louisville back in January. Those shows are still up, and you can hear that if you're looking at a bug mid-range style deck, or maybe you want to get a little bit more combo-rific. All three of the tryhards have veered off toward combo in some form or another for Eternal Weekend coming up. So with that, Matt, I'll let you tell us about the weekend that you had grinding Legacy events in Indianapolis. But first, tell us a little bit about your deck, some of the key components of it, and then we'll talk about play patterns and kind of how your weekend went. We'll consider this kind of part one of three of what the tryhards are going to play at Eternal Weekend.
Playing Food Chain, and I have settled on Food Chain. What it essentially does is it's a bug value deck. It's running Leovold, Deathrite Shaman, Baleful Strix, but it's also running Food Chain, which is a enchantment that you exile a creature and you get one plus the creature's converted mana cost. I play three Mist Hollow Griffin and one Eternal Scourge, which are both creatures you can cast from exile. One's a 3-drop, one's a 4-drop, and then Mist Hollow's a 3-3 flyer. Essentially, I play that, and then I can create infinite mana, and I pump it into Walking Ballista. I'll go ahead and break my spicy tech today. Instead of running like Thoughtseize as main, because I feel like this is a value deck, not really a control the hand deck. Instead of running those main, I'm running a Sylvan Library and a Nimble Obstructionist. Now, you may have to look that card up, but Nimble Obstructionist is an Amonkhet. It's a 3-1 flyer for a blue and two colorless with flash flying, or you can cycle it for the same cost. It's just a stifle, uncounterable stifle. So the reason I'm running that is because I can flash in the Nimble Obstructionist at the end of turn to be able to cycle out to my Food Chain for 4 mana to cast my Mist Hollow Griffin and create infinite, so essentially get that combo started. I can also just flash in as a 3-mana chump blocker. I've done that. Or a 3-mana threat. Some decks for a while were running Vidillion Click. I'm now running that in the side. So I played in 3 challenges this weekend since we were going to Eternal Weekend, and they were all awarded Eternal Weekend buys. On Friday, I went 3-0-1. How it worked was all the 4-0s went into their own brackets, and they used the modified play draw, so whoever was at the top got to play through the brackets, and the top player within that bracket got an Eternal Weekend buy. The 3-0-1 did not qualify me. I took a draw in round 3. The one thing I learned from that first one was I was holding my Walking Ballistas in my hand. I kind of wrote down some notes about, hey, here's what I screwed up in this game. Here's what I screwed up in this game. I was holding them in my hand to hold for the combo because once it's on the field, I can't pump it. I can only use the Food Chain combo to cast creature spells. I can't use it to activate creature spell or creature abilities. So I was holding it for my combo where I think it would have been more value actually just playing it out for 1 or 2. And then just pumping it up and using it to pick off a lot of threats because a lot of stuff has one butts in within Legacy. On Saturday, I played again. I went 3-0-1 again. Played Sunday. Played against a good game of decks. Played against Burn round 4 and actually went 4-0. And I was the top of the seed, so I got to pick first on playing 4 of those buys. I had the buy since there was only 3 4-0s. The 2 Grixis players played off, and then I played the winner, and the winner of that match got the buys. I played out my Walking Ballistas much more aggressively. Like, I would play them out into the board if I was playing against a deck that they had value on the board. When I was playing that Grixis opponent, he won game 1, and it was super close. Game 2, I'm pretty sure the opponent was trying to angle shoot, and he angle shot himself because he was running all Chinese cards. He forgot that Deathrite Shaman doesn't target. I had a Leovold out. So he probably could have killed me if he would have worked really, really hard. It would have changed the game. I ended up beating him by playing a Walking Ballista out at 1, and I just kept drawing lands, pumping it. And by the end of the game, it was actually a 4-4, and I kept pinging off his Elemental Makers that Grixis runs, and then I was pinging off his Delvers, and I was pinging off his Death Rites whenever they come out. Everyone was laughing. We had 3 judges standing around us, and they were laughing because they're like, that Walking Ballista is just absurd. And I'm like, yes, yes, it is. So game 3 we went. I'm not going to lie. I was super nervous because I'm like, I really, really want these buys. Same thing happened. We were just flooding out. I played out Walking Ballista on 1. I actually didn't have to ping anything off. I was just attacking in, and it was actually a 5-5 by the time I had killed him, and it started off at 1. A couple times he did play something out. I ping it off. And he's like, man, you just beat me with those walking ballistas. I became the eternal weekend trial champion for Sunday at GP Indy. There was only three of us that got buys there. So now when Sean and Brian are playing through the gauntlet in the first round, I will be laying around and taking a nap when they're doing that. Sean, you can enter the crowd clapping right here because now I'm going to rub this in there and say I have buys for Eternal Weekend forever.
Oh, my God.
But it was a whole ton of fun. And I'll tell you what, Nimble Obstructionist, they're going to post the deck list for all these. So you'll be able to see the exact deck list in a few days. Nimble Obstructionist did a lot of work. It is a three drop, so I'm not sure I want more than one of them in my deck, but here's some of the things I got to stifle throughout the days. Enter this battlefield trigger of Snapcaster Mage when he was trying to get crop rotation to go get his Thespian Stage to win the game. I stifled a Batterskull hard cast. I stifled a Stoneforge Mystic, and this is my favorite. I stifled a Jace, the Mind Sculptor ultimate. So he was at 13 counters, and he's like, ultimate Jace. I'm like, stifle it. And that's when the guy had first seen it in my deck, and he goes, what does that do? I was really proud of that one. I also got to stifle trigger off of Thespian Stage, stifled the Bedlam River trigger. Ton of fun this weekend. Glad I earned the buy. Hope I can grab a second buy, and I hope you guys can get to a tournament before then that is running these Eternal Weekend trials. And they usually, the ones here were about anywhere from 18 to 35. It was a lot of fun, just four rounds, knock Legacy out, and I got to play a wide variety of decks as well, a lot of good players.
What did you think about what people were playing? Were they sticking to the normal Legacy tried and trues, or did you see any kind of, other than that Jund Turbo Depths deck, did you see other things in the room or that you played against that kind of caught your eye?
No, people were playing, you know, the one or two of spicy cards, and Teferi's Protection was in, and two of my Death and Taxes player were playing in the sideboard. They showed me that. Generally, it was Grixis, Death and Taxes, a lot of check pile, you know, the four color pile, Storm, and then I just saw one burn player. I played against one burn player, but I think that was all I saw against all of them. But other than that, I mean, there wasn't anything crazy. There wasn't anything, you know, just like brand new decks out there. So it was the normal, I would say the normal metagame, but a lot of Death and Taxes, a lot of check pile.
Hurley, as you were playing through this weekend and getting some more experience, because you mentioned with the changes in the deck, the addition of Walking Ballista, that you needed a little bit more time with it to sort of get back on top of it. Now that you've had that, I want to go a quick lightning round here. I'm going to throw out some of the popular Legacy decks and just kind of tell me what you think your percentage is against them, whether you're favored, what your percentage is. So we'll kind of do this quickly. Let's start with Storm.
Like 35 to 40.
Death and Taxes.
Ooh, that's a tough one. It's probably close to even.
Four Color Delver.
55% or so, maybe 60.
Bug Control with Jace and the Death Rites and that whole thing that's cropped up with True Name Nemesis.
The True Name Nemesis kind of knock it out, so I would say 45% or so. It's a combo for me. I have to combo off.
Burn.
Burn's a tough one. Probably 30% game one.
Sneak and Show.
45%, 40%.
Omni Show.
About the same, 40%, 45%.
Okay, so it seems very interesting where that deck is right now. Brian, were there any major sort of recurring archetypes that I missed there?
No, just he's talked about the kind of the different Stoneblade decks that mm-hmm. he played against. So what would you kind of lump them up, the Stoneforge packages and things? So what would you say on those, Harley?
Probably 60. I mean, they go slow enough, they're fairly easy. Any of the fair decks, fair-ish decks, I'm probably slightly over half with the fair-ish decks.
And if I'm sitting on the other side of the table from you, how does a player recognize when somebody's playing Food Chain before they actually play the Food Chain? Because you mentioned you're a bug deck now. You have some value aspects. You have a Baleful Strix. You have Deathrite Shaman. So kind of what are the key cards in Food Chain that the opponent should be looking at?
Food Chain runs more basics. I actually run four basics. A lot of the other bug decks only run two basics. The key ones you see, obviously, are Food Chain, Mist Hollow Griffin, and Manipulate Fate, which is the card that gets three cards out of your deck, exiles, and you draw a card. So if you see any of those, and I will tell you, counter the Manipulate Fate. That's the one that is like, it's essentially like a draw three for this deck. Anything that's in the exile zone, I can play with. So that's the big card. But those, if you see a lot of basics coming out, and then they're not playing any Fatal Pushes, probably that might be Food Chain.
He has the buys for Eternal Weekend. Brian, I think what he deserves is a slow clap from both of us. Maybe just get the... All right. Hurley, congratulations. That is quite the achievement to run through that gauntlet and go undefeated. So he'll have the buy at Eternal Weekend. Looking for more. Part one of three. Got to know Food Chain tonight. Brian is on Sneak and Show, and I'm going to be on Reanimator. We'll get a chance to talk about those as the schedule allows. Heading toward Eternal Weekend coming up at the end of October. That brings us up to tonight's In the Elevator. It does mean more Matt, but also it means more Gideon. I'm not sure I'm ready for this continued world, Matt. Why are we looking at Gideon again?
Gideon of the Trials, I'm looking at the foils. You can get them sub $20. And the reason is because this is going to become a very popular card in Modern. It's not going to get up to Gideon, Ally of Zendikar levels, but the foils are so inexpensive right now. Trade for some foils. You can play multiple Gideons now. That doesn't matter in Standard, but once you get it into EDH and Modern, these foils are going to become in demand, and this is one of the cooler Gideons we've seen.
Gideon of the Trials are in the elevator this week here on Tryhards. That brings us up to 3 minutes to brew. All right, Sick Boy's had enough time to recover, so I'm still going to make you shepherd us through this.
I'm looking forward to this one. All right, so as I've been going through cards in my collection, unloading some to make room for my new acquisitions for Sneak and Show, I came across a card that I just absolutely loved back in the day, and I thought it would be a fun one to kind of throw out to you guys for the build around. This one is Necrotal. It is a human assassin, 2 black and 2 other, a 2/1 first strike. When Necrotal comes into play, destroy target non-artifact, non-black creature. That creature can't be regenerated. Guys, I used to run this in kind of a value deck with Singer Vampires and all kinds of other fun old school type cards. The value part of this where the comes into play, thankfully it won't obviously get stifled by the Nimble Obstructionist, I hope, someday, Hurley. But the Necrotal card seems to be good on value, even though 4 is a little bit high. It's not a high-demand card by any stretch, but it is a fun one. So, Hurley, I'm going to start with you. What do you think about Necrotal?
I like Necrotal a lot. I mean, you're talking to a guy who in Modern ran a big game hunter with some success as well. So I think Necrotal is just a nice value card, decent on the stats. It just kills a lot of stuff. Now, the only issues with Necrotal are Death Shadow is so big, it can't target Death Shadow. And then if you're playing against any artifact decks, it can't target those. So it feels a little bit out of place when we're brewing with it. But I think you want to put it into these decks that are board controls, but you want essentially a 2-for-1. So with Necrotal, it's so great because you are essentially getting a removal spell along with 2/1 first strike creature. I love Necrotal. I think it's amazing value. If Death Shadow were ever to get banned from the format, I think you could see people playing it in Modern.
Sean, Necrotal.
I think in this era, it is just too far gone. You have to remember the era that this was printed in. We gladly paid three for something that was worse than Doomblade. And that was Terror. And Necrotal was value because you paid for your Terror and you got a 2/1 first striker for 1 stapled to it. And that could be at least a 2-for-1. And it could be a more for 1 because the first strike and butts weren't as big back then for lower mana costs. So Necrotal was a real terror running around. I think now, though, you're going to look at more casual decks. This is something that I still love to experiment with in EDH. Any black deck worth its salt probably plays a Shelurid. So if it dies, you just kind of keep getting it back and using its value as a threat. Any deck that can blink things, I think this is something that's absolutely fun. And it's also a great tip of the cap back to an era when creatures didn't do more than one thing. You know, this and Flametongue Khafu really kind of set the bar for creatures that were both threats and removal. So I think it's a great spin back, but in this era, if Necrotal was running around in Standard today, would anybody be impressed? I don't think so. It just tells you where the New World Order has taken us, but it was a powerhouse in its day.
Yeah, I would agree. I think it's just too slow. Sean, you're right. It did kind of break new ground with a little bit of the Enter the Battlefield. It did kind of give us that whole idea of value for the cards, because you look at a 2/1 first striker for 4, That's terrible. But when you can take a creature off the board and add a 2-1 first striker on your side, that's definite upside. We're in a different time. Cards are, especially creature cards, are getting printed in a much different vein. But Necrotal is a good blast of the past. And yeah, it's kind of fun to kind of see what you guys thought of that.
Necrotal, 3 minutes to brew this week. Sometimes it's good to think a little outside the box, and that definitely was it. All right, I don't know what other visions you're having based on the quote-unquote cough syrup you're taking, Brian. All right, we'll see where this leads us in the future. That brings us up to what we did to get better at Magic this week. Brian, did you do anything? I'm hoping with some downtime, maybe you listened to some podcasts, read some articles, did something to get better.
Yeah, I did. I listened to some podcasts. I tried to just keep up on the news as much as I possibly could. With school getting back into the swing of things, it's always hard to do that. But I would say the one thing that I did to get better at Magic this week was I've been goldfishing out this Sneak and Show deck quite a little bit as I take out my proxies and put in the real cards as I slowly but surely get them. And it's really fun to see how the lines of play have just kind of solidified themselves in my head already. And I'm already starting to look at some other cards that I think might be a better fit in here. And so it is always kind of fun to have a project, to have a deck or a tournament that you're going to, you know, really focus on. And that's what we're doing. We're not playing the same deck this time like we did back in Louisville in January. But to really kind of get into this, something brand new I've never done before, and just try to get all the reps I can in, gold fishing and things and watching some videos, I think it's going to be a lot of fun to play regardless.
I mentioned it earlier in the show. I got to introduce Rachel to Legacy this weekend. And whenever you're introducing a player to either a new game or if they're already in Magic to a different format or a different deck, it might be tempting at first to say, this is how you play this. This is how you do this. This is what it's designed to do. But ultimately, that's a little bit of a disservice to them. It gives them a shortcut, but I think it's more powerful for people to understand concepts and flows within any sort of, knowledge matrix, if you will. So my approach with her has been to give her exposures to concepts, and she can figure out which ones appeal to her. And when somebody learns something on their own or puts those pieces together on their own for the first time, Brian will tell you as a teacher, that's a much more powerful moment for them than it is to just have you go, this goes with this and do this when you get this. And then they think they're expected to just memorize that. So while it might be tempting to help people shortcut and it's more engaging for you, you have to step back and think, how are you helping this person become either better at the game or a better player or serve themselves going forward? So my utilizing of concepts has been working for us so far. I will say this. She's a way smarter than the average bear. So I can kind of shortcut some of those things because I know she'll figure them out fairly quickly herself. So when you're helping someone into a different level of Magic, kind of keep that in mind. Matt, what'd you do to get better?
Played a whole crap ton of Legacy. It's not like riding a bike with this deck, especially with the changes for Walking Ballista. So I think just in these three tournaments alone that I had played, along with a couple pickup games, that it greatly advanced my understanding of the deck, even though I had played it a lot before.
No, you brave soul, sticking it out to the end. May you ride all the dinosaurs you wish. We'll see you next week here on Tryhards.